Blog Talk Radio.
Never. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another segment of Bringing Sexy Back. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. Hope everybody's doing okay this Wednesday evening after the snow yesterday. And, you know, we're not that far into the spring, and we had a snow day. But anyway, it was a good day because, you know what, if you listen to this show, you woke up on it. You know, be grateful and thankful for that. Okay, we have a very special guest this evening, but first I'm going to bring in my guest co-host.
Well, hello, everybody. This is authoress Terry E. Lyle, just hanging out with my girl.
Hey, thank you, darling. You know, you always come to the rescue, girl. That's why I love you like I do. Yeah, Terry is going to be, help me get it on tonight because Jade had the night off. She had a few other things that she had to do tonight, and my other co-host is listening on the line for the time being. She's en route to getting home. And my other co-host, I don't know where he is, but wherever he is, I hope he's safe and, doing whatever it is he's got to do. With that being said, I'm going to let everybody know a little bit about the gentleman that I'm going to bring on before I bring him on. His name is Rico Lamorax, and he's an author of dramatic novellas. A lifelong lover of storytelling, he does not limit himself to one genre, believing that a great story transcends such. He says, quote, "Journey should be multifaceted, just as in real life. Through this we experience, we appreciate the beautiful diversity that makes life so colorful." The author is releasing one ebook novella per month for the whole of 2014, in addition to writing a daily blog on Goodreads. So this man is quite busy. He's putting out novellas once a month, you know. So with that being said, we're going to bring him on and get this show on the road. Oh, I see my other co-host. Let me bring him on. Good evening, Jay Dino. Hey. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How you doing?
Good. I'm fantastic. I have a guest co-host. Terry's on helping me out tonight. And Rhea's just listening right now. She'll be in a little later. But, yeah, so did you hear the introduction, our guest tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right, so with that being said, we're going to bring him in so we can grill him.
All right.
Good evening, Rico. How are you, darling?
I'm doing great. How are you, Gail?
I am fantastic, dear. Now, let's go way back to when Rico was a little boy. What was it like for you growing up? Do you have any siblings, and where are you originally from?
Well, I'm originally from California, but my mother was kind of nomadic, so I lived in quite a few states. And, had a pretty dramatic childhood, you know, going in and out of foster care and everything with my siblings. I have four brothers and one sister. And so, they say that, sometimes when you face obstacles in life, it can make you a better writer if you happen to be a writer. And, you know, I believe that to be true. But it made me a stronger writer. And I got through a kind of a rough childhood and became an author.
You said that your mom was like a nomad. Y'all was in different places, and you said about foster care. So does that mean that your mom stayed in the foster care with you and your siblings, or y'all was separated?
We were basically separated because the state had decided that she couldn't properly take care of us at the time, and we grew up with no father in the household. So, we were all basically separated at that time.
Sorry to hear that. Did y'all ever get back together and, reconnect with your mom?
The state ended up sending us back to my mother. I was a teenager, and my older brother was already, 18, and so my younger siblings they eventually got back home, too. That was in the early 90s.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Okay. Now, you said it made you a stronger writer. Exactly when did you start writing, and when did you know that you were able to write? What, you know, inspired you to write?
Well, I think, as with most authors, I started off as a very avid reader, and I just fell in love with the literary world. And so that really started in the sixth grade for me, although I used to write, like, little quirky poems even before that. But really in the sixth grade, we had this contest of, you know, students seeing how much books they can read. And so I entered, and, you know, I just fell in love with books, and so I read a lot. And by the time I entered intermediate and high school and we got those writing assignments like essays and so forth, I found that I truly enjoyed it. That was really my favorite subject. And it just grew from there. You know, after high school, I went to film school and studied screenwriting. And unfortunately, you know, in that business of Hollywood, it's really about who you know based a lot more than on actual talent. And so after running that hamster wheel, I decided, you know, I'm just going to concentrate on more traditional narrative, and I focused on novellas.
Okay, Rick, let me ask a question real quick. You said that you were into the erotica novellas, right? So when did you get all turned out? While you was in foster care, or when you were just coming through puberty? Why did you focus on the erotic side of things?
Well, actually, it's funny because, you know, I'm over here in Southeast Asia right now because my wife is here. And so, you know, unfortunately, you know, you've got to make a certain income limit to bring a spouse to the U.S. on a visa. And so I don't quite make that income limit. And so I've chosen to stay with her, even though, you know, I really miss back home. You know, nothing's like, I mean, you really treasure being an American when you're stuck on the other side of the world. But and so, you know, I was doing these freelance writing jobs, and I was hired from a couple of adult video sites, and they needed a writer to write descriptions. And so I started doing that work, and I found it kind of interesting, you know. And to delve into that type of brief storytelling, but, you know, they were more focused on quantity over quality. Because they had a lot of videos. And so eventually I stopped working for them, and I just wanted to concentrate more on writing novellas. And so although I say I write dramatic novellas, but yes, a lot of it, it delves into eroticism because, you know, like real life, I want my characters to be multifaceted, and that includes their intimate parts of their life. And so,
is that
mimicking
part of your life? Are you sexy? I mean, you know.
Well, I think you would have to ask my. I think you would have to ask my wife that.
I know.
So that's how you got into writing erotica. Now, it also stated that you do other genres besides erotica, and looking over your press kit that you sent me, I saw one that was very interesting and had caught my eye, the Merritt Staircase Trilogy. And what made you write that particular book, and what is that? Is that erotica, or is it just drama or mystery, or, you know, what is that particular book about?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Trilogy about?
Well, it's basically, I would say it's a horrific drama, and so it's really a horror story in a way, and there will be some pretty sexy stuff in there as well, because, like I said, just about every one of my stories, there's, you know, some stories more than others, you know, there's human sexuality, but just about every story I have, there's at least some human sexuality, because, like I said, I want my characters to reflect real-life characters, and so that includes that part of their life. But yeah, with the Merritt Staircase Trilogy, it's really a horror story. And I'm actually running a crowdfunding campaign right now on fundanything.com, and trying to raise the funds to make it a graphic novella. So, you know, basically like a comic book style, but because I think it would be much better brought to life with those strong visuals, illustrations to go along with the story. So if that campaign succeeds, then that's what I'll be doing. But if it doesn't succeed, my backup plan is just to release it as a regular novella trilogy. And so anyway, either way, it's going to be released, the first book in August, the second in September, and a third in October, right in time for the month of Halloween. And so basically, if you ever go into your bathroom, right, you know how most American bathrooms is set up where the medicine cabinet is very near the main mirror of the bathroom? And so if you open up that medicine cabinet, you'll see that the two mirrors are facing one another. And when you look in between those two mirrors, you see the illusion of a mirrored staircase, an infinite mirrored staircase, right? And so, you know, we used to play around looking at that when we were kids, and it really stuck with me throughout all these years, and I knew someday I wanted to write a story based around that. And so, actually, the story centers around that, and the main villain is actually in, her name is Aunt Mama, and she comes from the South, and she's a very intriguing character, actually, that is into witchcraft. And I don't really say she's a bad character because she has her motivations because she's blind. She starts off as a blind woman. And so she does these spells or whatever to be able to regain her sight. So even though she's a protagonist, I don't really view her as that much of a bad person. But, yeah, it's a pretty intriguing story, I think, and I'm hoping to release it as a graphic novella because I think, again, the illustrations will bring it to life a lot better.
Right. And I also read a little bit of that. Mama does something with a blade. Is that true?
Yes. Because the antagonist is Aunt Mama, actually, and the protagonist is this guy named Joseph. And the first of the trilogy, he basically comes home and he finds his fiance in bed with another man, and so, you know, he pretty much loses it, and he goes to the bathroom medicine cabinet and he grabs a straight razor, and that's where really all the chaos begins.
Okay, wow. Well, that I can't wait for that. You said you have all three of them out by October, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to keep my eyes open for that because just reading the little, you know, synopsis that I was reading was very intriguing, you know. So, and how did you come up? Oh, okay, you already said it from looking in the mirror. Now,
I wanted to add is, like, yeah, on the fundraising campaign that's on right now on fundanything.com, I've had it set up to where basically those who do contribute to the campaign, they get the whole trilogy at over 30% off. And they get it in advance in advance, as well as an opportunity to actually receive a original artwork. If we get this, all the funds raised, those who contribute will receive original signed artwork by me and the illustrator. So there's a few pretty cool rewards that come along with helping out the campaign.
Oh, okay. So you do artwork as well.
Well, actually, we'll be hiring a professional illustrator that's why we need the funds, to actually hire a professional illustrator to do the artwork.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's talk about the 6 degrees of sexpiration.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration behind writing that that book?
Well, as you know, there's five short stories, and they're interlinked by six characters. And so when I was, as I mentioned earlier, I was writing for adult video sites, writing descriptions for them for the videos they did not have. And so on the side, I was, you know, starting to come up with these short stories myself of that I was planning to work on later on once I left that job. And so the first story to come to me was actually the last story in that book, which is Big Apple, Little Cherry. And so I started to write that one first. And then pretty interestingly, how it came together is I worked backwards. And this is the only story slash novella that I've ever done this, where I wrote the last story first, and then I just worked my way back from there until I got to the first story. So that's five short stories, but I actually worked backwards. to me, at that particular story, it helped me link the characters and figure out exactly how to, you know, interlink them. Yeah.
So you don't do an outline when you're writing your stories. You just write.
Well, most of the time I just have a brief outline in my head or sometimes written down, but just brief. I'm not one of those writers that is very detail-oriented when it comes to outlines, because I believe that when you sit down and you write, that actual process is where the magic really comes, you know? And so sometimes I'll have an outline written out, and sometimes it would just be in my head, actually. But it really depends on the writer, right? Because I know some writers who they really like to have it detailed, so basically it's like a puzzle and they just have to sit down and fill in the blanks. So there is really no wrong way to do it, but I just happen to be the type of writer to where I think the magic happens for me as I'm sitting down and actually like I'm viewing it in my head and being able to narrate it.
Right, because my last book, Back to Zero, I wrote it in parts. I wrote the middle, I think I wrote the middle first, then I wrote near the end, and then I did the beginning. So, yeah, it's just a process of how your thinking goes. You know, when you had those thoughts on your mind, you put them down on paper. So I understand that.
Yeah, whatever the story is asking, you just listen, right?
Right. Yeah, and those characters be telling you what to do, you know. So,
yeah.
Now, your titles, how did you come up with your titles, Big Apple, Little Cherry?
Big Apple. Yeah, that's the last one in the five short stories. And basically, if you can recall, the main character, he goes to New York, right, on business.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, that's the Big Apple. And so that part is the Big Apple. And then the little cherry represents the Chinese-American Sandy.
Okay. Yeah, because some titles you know, some people have titles, and it doesn't seem like they even go with the story. You have to say, well, why did they title it this, you know? But, you know, only the author knows the real reason, because I've read some books that the titles really – and I said to myself, why would he call this book this, and it's all about something different? But if you're reading really deeply into the book, then you can understand it, because this guy had wrote a book titled – what was the name of that book? Reindeer something, and the cover was really plain, and it had a reindeer on it, and I said, wait a minute, I don't think this is going to be interesting. But what the book was about, once I started reading it, was about a girl who had went to college, and she had gotten raped by a serial rapist, and the father, the daughter didn't want to talk about it. She just, you know, got on with her life or whatever, and the father was determined to find out who this serial rapist was, because eventually he started killing women, and she was the, you know, a survivor of it. But the story was really good, and then when the reindeer part came in was because this guy had a reindeer, I think in his yard or something, but that was the title of the book, you know, because sometimes they say you can't judge a book by its cover either, but, you know, some of these titles too. But
I think that's pretty cool when, you know, an author goes beyond just, like, gives the reader something to actually look into and think ahead of what is this going to be. Because, you know, a lot, especially like the erotic novellas or novels and the romance ones, a lot of times they have the cliched images on the covers, you know. And, you know, that's something I want to avoid, you know, because I design my own covers and because I want to add a little bit of mystery to it, you know, where the reader entices them to want to read it, but at the same time, they're really going to have to read the story in order to fully appreciate even the cover and the title. So, yeah, I really enjoy those type of books as well, you know.
Well, Rico, I have a question for you. Since you have started writing, a lot of people got different reasons. Some people want to leave a legacy. Some people do it because that's just their passion. That's their thing. Some people just do it because they're trying to put food on the table. What is your motivation behind being a writer?
I'd say all three of those, actually.
First and foremost
is to provide for my wife and my future child, right? and to get us out of here, because, you know, I mean, I miss home so much. It's going to be 12 years and 3 months, and so it's been really hard on me, and you know, I would love to bring my wife home, because, you know, I haven't even been able to bring her home to show her America, you know, and so all she knows
problem
is what...
Problem with finances, or is some kind of legal stuff that's keeping your wife stuck there in South Asia?
Basically, you have to make an income limit. The U.S. government makes you earn an income limit, and so I don't reach that income limit yet. Yeah, I mean, it kind
of
sucks, because, you know, I heard that...
I've never heard of such crap, you know.
Which
you have to be earning?
You have to earn, I think, at least 20 to. Well, the last time I checked, a couple of years ago, was at least like 20 to 25,000 a year.
Okay.
I think, and the problem was, you said, as I mentioned, with the foster care and everything. So I come from a life that's hard with my background with, and that was including financially. And then over here, of course, my wife, she comes from this third world country, and so she came from hardship as well. So. Destiny really wasn't kind to us in that sense, you know, putting us together when we both came from hardship. But, you know, we overcame because of our love for one another. And so, you know, I stuck it out here. And so, yeah, to answer your question, number one, it's to provide for my wife and future child. But number two, it's always been my passion to write. And, again, starting from becoming an avid reader. And then number three, yes, I truly would like to leave a legacy, because I'm one of those people who believe that, you know, I don't. Once I do this, leave this life, you know, I want my name to be able to represent the work I did in this lifetime, you know, and it's work that I wanted to follow my passion with, so that, you know, other people, if they learn about my story once I'm not here anymore, they will see a person who followed their passion.
So Rico, this is your sole source of income is writing.
Yep. Yeah, and that's why I do freelance jobs on the side until, you know, because I'm trying to, you know.
So God bless you, Rico, because I've been writing too. And every now and then I see a royalty check, but ain't nothing to jump up and down about. Okay, so, but God bless you, but I know what you're going through.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Rico. How did you meet your wife over there in Asia?
Back in 2000 and wait, at the beginning of 2001, I placed an ad because, you know, I was kind of by this time I was in my mid 20s and I was kind of thinking about marriage, and, you know, sad but true, back home there the divorce rate is over 50%, right, as we all know. And so I was thinking, well, you know, I don't care where I have to travel to the world, in the world, if I can find my, if it's possible to find a true soulmate, then I'm willing to go anywhere for that, you know? And so I placed an ad that went around the world. And but unfortunately, 5 months after I placed the ad, I became visually impaired. And,
oh, my goodness.
And so that really changed my life. But the following year, I decided, you know, my wife and I started corresponding because we met each other through being pen pals. And so the following year, even though I became visually impaired, I still made the trip all the way over here. And so that's how we basically met.
Okay. So you're not going to have a problem getting out of there, are you? Just your wife?
Yeah, I can come home anytime, of course, because I'm a citizen, but U.S. citizen.
Right.
But you know, like I said, I don't come from a family that of means, and so, you know, unfortunately, they can't even send for me on a holiday. So yeah, it's been so many years, but we just try to keep in contact through email. But, you know, I tell my wife I just can't leave her under such uncertainty when I know I won't know when I'll be able to return, because, you know, of course, if I was back home, I know I'd get a lot more, like, promotion done and so forth, because, you know, that's my home, and, you know, people there are open-minded and support, more so than here, of course, and because that is the land of opportunity. And it's true that people are more open-hearted and support people over there. And so if I was over there working really hard, then that would be a lot easier. But I just cannot leave my wife under such uncertainty, because I won't have no means to return back to her just in case I didn't make things happen over there. And so I'm just doing the best I can via the Internet and so forth from over here until...
Well, how long could she stay with a visa in the United States if she came as, like, she's coming for educational reasons and tourism? if she came on those two things to combine, how long could she stay?
Well, on those two things, you've got, like, for example, let's say education. You've got to prove all kinds of things with the universities or wherever school you're going to and so forth. And also with tourist visa, like, for example, okay, we're in the Philippines. So Filipinos have to prove to the United States Embassy over here, they have to even make income limits. You can't get a tourist visa to go to America unless you're making a certain amount of money over here. Like, you've got to own a business, you've got to own property, because you've got to prove to them that you have a reason to return back, because they have a big problem where people go over there and then they will stay there and hide so that they can stay in America. And so it's actually harder to get a tourist visa than it is to get a marriage visa. So if only I can make that income limit, then I would be able to apply for her marriage visa, and then we would have no problem. Within 6 to 7 months upon filing, would be home, and that would be it. But again, it's all based around money, which unfortunately everything is nowadays, right?
Wow. That is just so touching to hear a story like that. You know, you have that much love for your wife that you would travel around, almost completely around the world to be with her, and, you know, going to stick and stay with her. That's just beautiful. Well, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Gail Delicious Johnson. I'm more than just a radio personality. I'm also a best-selling author of 5 published books, publisher, ghostwriter, poet, and a speaker. My latest book, a fast-paced, action-packed, drama-filled novel titled Back to Zero, is available. You can order your autographed copy of Back to Zero and any of my other books from my website. That's www.jjpublishing.com. If you're looking to have your dreams come true in a book, look no further. I am the founder and owner of my own independent publishing company, JJ Publishing. JJ Publishing offers the service to fit the new or seasoned author's budget. There are no hidden fees. I display a professional business attitude towards my clients while treating them with dignity and respect. My mission is to make the first-time author as well as a seasoned author's use of JJ Publishing Service a most beneficial and memorable experience. Back to Zero is selling out fast. Don't be left out. Go to my website. Again, that address is www.jjpublishing.com. After you make your purchases, check out my website. I thank you all in advance.
Alrighty then, welcome back everybody. That's Dee Dee Sharp, I'm Not in Love. And I don't know if I had announced the song that when we first started the show. Well, if I didn't, I'm going to do it again. Earth, Wind, and Fire, I Write a Song for You was the opening song that I played. And this evening we have a very special guest who's abroad, as a matter of fact. And we've been getting into his novellas and, you know, what he's doing and where he came from. And I also see that my other co-host is on the line. I'm going to bring her in, and then we'll get right back to our special guest. Good evening, Rhea. How are you, dear?
Good evening. I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
I am fantastic. We have Terry as a co-host this evening, guest co-host, and Jadino's on the line. Jade is off tonight.
And hi, everybody.
Hey, Rhea.
Rico Lamoureux. Okay, well, getting back to Rico, how are you again, Dolly?
Let me ask you,
go on, dear.
Hey, Rico, let me ask you a question. Now, we done got all through the little stuff about where you live at and the problems getting to America and all that, you know. And, you know, we was talking about your novellas and the mystery and stuff, but Quasar's Cap, you know, baby, it's late over here. It's like 11:10. I want you to read to me some of your sexual novella, because I'm trying to get a good flow of where you're coming from, because you said I got an extra wife, and since that's impossible to see whether you're one of the characters, I want you to read something to me so I can see if I can feel that thing, you know, what you're working with.
Oh, well, actually, I don't have my books right in front of me right now, because, you know, they're only on file, but... Do you want me to describe some of the books, or
not describe the books? Describe in detail some of the characters, and just like, you know, just paraphrase, just make up a character on the spot, and get, you know, get into it, you know, and just make up something. Let me see, you know, how you flow farther in the romance department, because you said you do erotica, you know, prove it to me.
well, yeah, you are putting me on the spot here. But, you know, I would say, yes, I don't have it in front of me, but there are some few excerpts that you can check out online. But basically, yeah, when you know, I think that there's a lot of authors out there that, I mean, just mainstream, because I really enjoy dramatic stories and everything. But the one area that disappoints me is when they get into the intimate scenes, because they brush it over too much, in my opinion. And so that's why, you know, just about every book of mine, I do delve into eroticism, because I do like to go into the detail. You know, I like to, you know, I've read some so-called romance novels where, you know, they either they're using cliche language, or they, you know, they're just starting at the beginning of, you know, foreplay or what have you, and then next thing you know, they pick up in the next paragraph, it's the next morning. And so, you know, I actually enjoy going into the detail, going into the foreplay and so forth. And
okay,
and,
well, give me some. I can give you some. Like I said.
Okay. I'll give you one example then. Okay, in 6 Degrees of Sexpiration, right? The first story. It's called The Unleashing of Gerard Hayes. And so, in that story, there is the character is a young college guy studying to be a sexologist. And and he's encounters this older woman, and basically to set it up, she works at a nursing home, because he goes there to visit his dying grandfather, right? And so he's there to visit the dying grandfather, but he's basically doing his homework late at night, and so she comes in and they start talking, and she's like, "What are you studying?" And so she looks at his computer, and he's studying basically this thing called Kachapati, and this is from Uganda, right? And this is it's the tradition really in Uganda in this one tribe that's in a remote place in Uganda where they practice female ejaculation. And so she says, you know, in the story, you know, I heard that's a myth. That's not true, you know, blah, blah, you know, because she's Western, right? And then he's like, no, you know, there is proof. And you know, they've tested their scientific proof, which in reality there is. They've tested the levels, the hormonal levels, and whatever, and they've proven that it's not urine, that it's actually female ejaculation. And so, And so, you know, he is studying this part aspect to go into his report as a sexologist student. And so that's where it starts. And, you know, he's just
like
a young...
But we're getting off track here. I understand the background and all that to your story. I don't want a documentary. What I was trying to ascertain from you, Rico, is that since you do erotica stuff, you don't know that the lady you got on the line here, Gail, over here in the United States, man, she got the best erotica sound effects to have in making love. Now, I was just going to say to you, for instance, I'm going to give you what I'm looking for. For instance, if I was talking to you one-on-one, I would say, ooh, Rico, darling, baby, ooh, you know, stuff like that. I want to see how you would address me if it was me and you and you was coming on to me, this is going to wind up in the book. Bring me your foreplay. I mean, let me visualize your foreplay. You're talking to me, and then I'm gonna let you listen to Gail because she take this shit out the box. You know what I'm saying? You know, oh Lord, Gail will make women get turned on listening to her moan and groan. So I ain't gonna try to imitate her. You gonna get live her. But you know, just come on to me like you know. You give me some foreplay so I can get a feel for what your writing is because I don't like to read documentaries and erotica. You know, I don't like to read statistics and facts. I want to see a story that's building and unfolds and is very central as it unfolds. And since you write erotica, I'm just testing your skill level. You know, okay, think you're going to get this. How you going to approach me?
Okay, well... Okay, let me point out first off that I'm a writer, okay? I'm not no, like, you know, this. So you know, writers, you know, we hide behind a pen. But basically, because, you know, on the spot, you know, I'm not... But basically, let's see.
I'll tell you what, Rico, I'm going to give you a treat. While you sit there and think about what you're going to say, I'm going to let Gail moan and groan for you when she's at the peak of getting ready to come, and they know that it's the real thing, you know, and she all turned on, and that guy got sweat sliding down the back of her butt, you know what I'm saying, and then she up there moaning and groaning. Listen closely how Gail do it, because maybe y'all need to hook up so she can add a little bit more flavor to your books. Gail, give me a little sample how you do it, darling.
What I'm looking for the poem that I did that I voiced over for you, and I'm going to play that for him because I'm not. I
yes,
hope I have it on
here. Baby. We're going to you might want to put your wife down here. They'll moan and groan.
Oh, my goodness, I don't have it on here. Terry?
Yes. Okay, well, I have it.
Do you
this
have
it? This is called
it?
The Download. This is a poem that I wrote, and my darling friend Gail, she put the voice over. And, oh, my goodness, I had people that I was trying to interview on my show. They want to stop and talk about this particular poem that she did. So I'm going to let you hear it right now. I'm going to bring it to you live. And this is Gail, man. This chick is bad to the bone.
Download. When you told me that you were coming over, I was so excited. I felt guilty, as if I were going to faint on the spot. It seems like forever that I've adored you from a distance. My heart smiles every time I see your face. I rush home so fast to prepare for your visit. Hot bubble bath, scented candles, soft red light, complemented by beautiful slow music on the radio. I cut up small pieces of watermelon so I could tantalize and feed a sucker with the sweet, moist, savory fruit. My dream girl finally arrived. I slide slowly off the bed that later will tell the story of a hot, passionate sexual encounter with the intensity of rabid thin heat. As she leaned forward against my bed, I came from behind while my hands began to grope her pussy and squeeze her body. Pulling her closer to me, I pressed into her velvet skin, trying to merge our flesh into one as she began to remove the scanty articles of clothing. Fully nude, she climbed into my bed as lay there in her nakedness. I felt tightness in my chest. I knew I must not be able to satisfy her, not wanting it to be the last time. Caught up in the modest shyness that I so cleverly concealed behind the center chiffon scarf that covered her eyes, I looked at her nipples, waiting for my mouth to devour them and her pussy to lavish over. As my fingers slide inward, my tongue licks her wet, moist, dripping pussy as she sighs. Breathing so slow and so deeply, I allow my tongue to search out and caressingly travel around her body, leaving areas to explore later. I feel my own pussy starts to moisten up, and beads of sweat engulf my breast and cascade down my back. I think this is forbidden fruit. While I don't care, I'm in the moment. How much I crave for her to fuck me ever so hard that my pussy screams out into ecstasy as we both are feeling the overwhelming, intense desire to have sex. After prolonged foreplay, I return to the dark cavern where I pat her lips and her aroma of body heat drives me to a frenzy.
Internet cafe. I can't do nothing now. You know that.
Mr. Vibrator, I'm beside me. No harmony. As I turned it on, ice me, because I know it's getting ready to become hot and heavy. As I continue to lap up her pussy juice, as if likened unto a cat bowl of milk, I purr as my body screams out to be penetrated and sucked. I want to fuck like this my last day on earth. I roll my head sideways and reached up to pinch her nipples that were standing at attention in anticipation of my touch. We decided to switch places because I'm already on fire. She spreads my legs wide, went down with her experience. Penetrating my pussy like a pea in frenzy. Oh, I can't contain myself. Reaching out to find something to hold onto. Arms and hands. Feeling my hands so firmly. I think this can't be as good as it seems. What the hell kind of love making is this?
What I'm talking about. All you gotta do is hear that. You know they're hitting it. girlfriend is getting it. That's why I just want to see, read me some of that novella. Let me know they getting it because, girl, she is bad to the bone. I just had to throw that up in there.
Thank you, Terry. But it was a little, you hear like a little echo from it. But I had downloaded it on, I just downloaded it on my,
to the copy
on
of
my
Rico
switchboard.
So they inspire him to write some more erotica.
I know I couldn't hear the words, but I knew they were getting it.
I know that's right.
Well, before the show ends, I'll play it again because it'll be a little bit clearer. Because Terry, how was you playing it? You was playing it from the desktop. Oh, okay, yeah, because I play it from the studio where you can hear it better. I'll play it a few minutes before we close out. Okay. Now, about the novellas, what made you write novellas opposed to just writing a book? And how many pages do your novellas generally have in them?
Well, since I come from a background of screenwriting and film school, that's a very concise and some would say rigid way of writing because you have to write exactly what's on the screen. And no character inner thoughts unless it's voiceover and so forth. And so I came from that world, and so I was kind of comfortable writing concise stories. And so when I left screenwriting and went into writing my first book, I just realized that that transferred over. And so I felt comfortable writing short, concise stories, and I felt I can still write a complete, satisfying, dramatic story in that fashion. And so they're generally under 100 pages, like between 80 and 100 pages long, each of them. And it's not that I just set out to write novellas all the time. You know, maybe one day I'll write and the story would tell me it wants to be a novel length. But up until now, you know, they've all come in under 100 pages where I can tell a complete story and have it still be in between the, you know, 15 to 30,000 word mark.
Right. So you did screenwriting before you wrote your first novella. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I studied in film school.
Okay. Now, I was trying to write a play. And, you know, they say it's more different than writing a book, you know, but I'm just having a problem with that because I know there's more dialogue when you write a play opposed to when you're writing a book. And I think I could maybe write a screenplay opposed to writing a stage play. You see what I'm saying? So how do –
yeah.
So do you see the difference in doing that?
Yes. You know, in a book you have total freedom. You can just – you can spend chapters just writing about, you know, the background or the inner thoughts of a character and so forth. You can just go on and on as long as you want. But in a screenplay, you have to be very concise, and basically 1 minute of screen time equals 1 page of script. And so that's why, you know, generally you would see that scripts are about 100 pages or so for like an hour and 40-minute film, or 2 hours is a 120-minute film. And so it has to be very concise because it has to be exactly what you see up on the screen. You're in present tense, and you're describing exactly what you're watching on the screen. And they say in general terms that it should be 60% description, 40% dialogue, because a lot of first-time screenwriters, they use too much dialogue, too much talking. And there's a saying that says, show it, don't tell it, you know, because it's a movie, you're watching it. And with plays, even though regular stage plays, I don't really have any training with that, but I've heard that, you know, there's a lot more dialogue. So you have to focus more on dialogue because it's right there on the stage. You know, you're limited when as far as action because sets and props are limited, right, because you're right there in front of the audience. So I think there's much more focus on dialogue. But with scripts, it's the opposite. You know, you got to really focus on what's up there on the screen. And that's why I say with writing novellas or novels, you have total freedom. You can just write, and not have to worry about any of that rigidness.
Right, because they always say the book is, when they take a book and turn it into a movie, of course you're not going to see as much as you do in the book. So they always say the book is much better, you know.
Yeah, and 99% of the cases, that's true. I think, you know, there's only one that comes to mind off the top of my head that was almost precise, almost exactly like a book, and that was The Green Mile, you know, with Tom Hanks and Michael Clarke Duncan.
Right. Right.
And that did a really, really good job, is because I was almost exactly like the book. And but yeah, most of the time, that's why people say books are much better, because they have all the time in the world to tell it complete story with the inner thoughts and all that. But when they adapt it into a movie, you know, you have the producers, the director, the screenwriter that have to cut so much out of it.
Right, right. And hopefully, you know, because I know how they talk about some movies, they had to drop that on the, they say they had to drop it on the film floor or something. It's a term that they use.
Cutting room floor, yeah.
Yeah, on the cutting room floor, right. They had to cut this out and cut that out. But, you know, hopefully because one day I am going to turn, you know, my books either into a movie or a stage play, you know, but it's just getting over that thing of, you know, trying to do it. And I honestly believe that I could write a screen script opposed to a stage script.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gail. On my prepaid card, it just said I only have 1 minute. It's going to cut me off. So I'm really sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Well, then you'll have to come back again. So, you know, we can set up another day so you can come back, because you did have a little while on the show. But I do appreciate you coming, you know, taking the time to be on the show. And sorry you won't be able to hear the download.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Right, and I'll email this to you on an MP3 and you can listen to it, okay? Oh,
yes,
he got cut off. He's over in Asia, you know, so then he's working on a prepaid card. But, you know, his story sounds so, it's just fascinating how he went all the way across the world to find his soulmate and how he's sticking with her, you know, because I don't know if I could go to a foreign country and, you know, just stay,
yeah.
You know, and he's been there 12 years.
Yeah, I couldn't just go
wow.
to the spring and say, hey, we're going to hook up and all things are going to be perfect. And then to be living in poverty pretty much, they are doing that, you know. Wow. But he said, didn't he say, though, that he put an ad in for a wife or something?
Yeah, he put an ad in the papers, and it was worldwide. And he said she corresponds, so they was corresponding. Then he went over there. Wow, you know, that's really something, though, for him to, you know, go from a foster care, you know, and go through the difficulties he went through his life, and then he ends up in Asia and, you know, have a wife over there and really wants to bring her back. But, you know, just 12 years, my God, that's
and
that's,
didn't even
that's
know the
really
language when he went there. I'm sure he's fluent now.
Oh, yeah, he got to be, you know, because I know his wife probably may have taught him or whatever. But, you know, nonetheless, that was really a good show, you know, and I'm going to play the download because Dino didn't hear it. So I'm going to play that, and I guess we will be closing the show out, okay? So you guys listen, okay? Aria.
Okay. Yes?
Did you have anything that you would like to say, darling?
No.
Okay. Did you enjoy Rico?
It was interesting. I'm curious about his books more so than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
His voice and the personality that I hear.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder. Do they match the tone of the book? I'm curious.
I'm curious. I think that's the beauty of it. Like you say, you can hide behind that fence.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
You respect for all you ain't.
So you walk past him on the street and wouldn't even think he's writing the stuff he writes. So
yes,
I can hide behind
exactly.
the fence.
Because if you just listen to him, you would be like, you write what?
Really? That's what I'm thinking.
He looks like a young boy, you know, but I think he's like maybe,
wow.
I think he's in his 30s or whatever, but he looks like a young boy, you know, his
mm-hmm.
pictures do.
But, yeah, so I'm going to be praying for him because I really do, you know, wish that he could, you know, bring his wife here and they could, you know, because like you said, if he was here, he'd probably be so much further along, you know, doing what he does because he writes novellas, puts out one once a month, and even if he sold them on Amazon or, you know, sold them out the trunk of his car, I'm quite sure he would have in 12 years that he's been over there. You know, he would have had, you know, a lot of money, you know, opposed to
right,
being
exactly.
over there. So, yeah, so I'm going to play the down low.
I wanted to ask you a question. Like, you were talking about transitioning from book to film and stage. And it's like I live at the movie, so it's kind of like when I write, I think I'm already writing for a movie. Because I see when I'm writing, I see what I'm writing down. Like you said, when you get them thoughts. Just writing, like you see me just say jargon on Facebook, and I save all of those. And that's what I was saying, now that we're doing stuff, I'm writing my own stuff now. So it's like I always wondered about that, like the transition, how you end up, because I see a lot of movies and the stuff I'm doing because the way I talk, people can't, but you can see it better. So I always just, I know you as a writer, I was saying,
yeah.
you know, when you said you want to make that transition,
What's
the format, like what they writing? Like, I don't even write like a writer. I just write. I just spit everything out on paper and save it, and then I usually turn them into form.
Right. Well, like I had mentioned, Back to Zero, I wrote that book. I wrote that book kind of backwards, you know, because when the thoughts was coming to me and, you know, some of the information that was given to me with that book, you know, I just put it down at that particular time, and then I had to, like, piece it together. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
Opposed to just writing from the beginning, the middle, and the end.
That's
so I had.
Well, I know. For me, a book that reads like a movie is so damn intriguing. I totally get lost in it. One of my Facebook friends wrote a series of books, and so that is actually my favorite series, probably to date. Because it just encapsulates so many different genres and different, you know, it just evokes all these different things in you. She just turned hers. She got hers on Richmond, WB in Richmond, and they're on YouTube, and so it was 6 episodes, which is your trial episodes, usually when they tell you whether or not they're going to accept something. And hers, I'm telling you, what she put on film was just like what she wrote in that book. And that right there alone took you, because it was, you know, those little nuances and those little things that you see, and you're like, I remember when he did that. Man, it was so fun watching that and so good watching that. It was just like the book. Just like
Wow. Yeah, well, I got a revision done on Back to Zero because hastily, you know, putting it out, and plus the people who called themselves editing it was just terrible. So I did a revision on it, and me going over that, putting it together again, even though when the first time I wrote it, I saw it as a movie, but now it's just so, everything is just, oh, my goodness, when this book, because I'm going to
visit.
Right, and I'm going to put it on Amazon once I get it, you know, formatted and all that kind of stuff. But just going over it again, oh, my God, I can't wait. I cannot wait. You know, and that takes a lot from a book, too, because if you're more or less of a perfectionist or whatever, you know, you want everything to be right. But that when I was going through what I was going through, that's just how it came out. But now that doing the revision on it, Lord have mercy, I cannot wait. And I was just reading it, and I was just seeing it on the big screen, and it looked so much better, you know, after the revision, you know, because you're going to see. And, Rhea, I'm going to send you a copy of the revised version now, because you haven't read the other one I sent you, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, don't read it, girl, because this one is going to be... I'm just so elated that, you know, and thank you, Terry. I love you for turning me on to the editor that you turned me on to.
You're welcome,
and,
girl.
Yes, and he's dynamite. He has years and years and years of editing. Even though a person say that they edit, doesn't necessarily mean that they are editors, okay? And I learned that the hard way. You know, a person say, I edit, I did this, I did that. No, if you have not been taught how to edit, you know, and been doing it for a living, making a life off of it, or if you're just doing it because you say you can, you have an English major and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't fly, you know, because that's what my first publisher said. And come to find out, the books that she had published, because I sent one of the books to my current editor just to read, and he was telling me all the errors that was in that book. And when he told me about the errors in Back to Zero, you know, I got that revised, but the other books, I'm just going to leave them like they are because they're not with my company. They're from my first publisher, and this is Back to Zero from my company, and I want that to be a reflection on my company. You see what I'm saying? So I'm saying all that to say good books, you know, even though sometimes books may have errors in them, and there may, you know, if you are a person who is a proofreader or whatever, and you see errors in a book, because I do proofread, and I can see errors in books, but I'm not an editor. I will never be an editor, you know, but, you know, check your editors out. Check them out. Get references on them, and if somebody say, I do this as a hobby, an editor that does it for a hobby, uh-uh. You got to show me some papers, okay? But, like I said, it will be out soon, and I'm going to send you the revised copy and read that, you know. But I'm just so proud of my editor until it's not even funny. I wish I had him when I did my first, you know, books with that other publisher. But, you know, that's water under the bridge, and I'm not crying over spilt milk because it's forward that I am going. And with that being said, I'm going to play the down low.
The down low. When you told me that you were coming over, I was so excited, but I felt guilty as if I were going to faint on the spot. It seems like forever that I've adored you from a distance. My heart smiles every time I see your face. I rush home so fast to prepare for your visit. Hot bubble bath, scented candles, soft red light, complemented by beautiful slow music on the radio. I cut up small pieces of watermelon so I could tantalize and feed her supple lips with the sweet, moist, savory fruit. My dream girl finally arrives. I slide slowly off the bed that later will tell the story of our hot, passionate sexual encounter with the intensity of rabbits in heat. As she leaned forward against my bed, I came from behind while my hands began to grope her pussy and squeeze her body. Pulling her closer to me, I pressed into her velvet skin, trying to merge our flesh into one as she began to remove the scanty articles of clothing. Fully nude, she climbed into my bed as if a lioness on the prowl and lay there in her nakedness. I felt tightness in my chest. I knew I must not fail to satisfy her, not wanting it to be the last time. Caught up in the modest shyness that I so cleverly concealed behind the scented chiffon scarf that covered her eyes, I looked at her nipples, waiting for my mouth to devour them and her pussy to lavish over. As my fingers slide inwards, my tongue licks her wet, moist, dripping pussy as she sighs. Breathing so slow and so deeply, I allow my tongue to search out and caressingly travel around her body, leaving areas to explore later. I feel my own pussy plastic moisten out, and beads of sweat engulf my breast and cascade down my back. Ooh, I think this is forbidden fruit. Well, I don't care. I'm in the moment. How much I crave for her to fuck me ever so hard that my pussy screams out into ecstasy as we both are feeling the overwhelming, intense desire to have sex. After prolonged foreplay, I return to the dark cavern where I part her lips and her aroma of body heat drives me into a frenzy. I lick her hot, steamy pussy while her ass starts to gyrate backwards and forwards as I stretch my hand to reach the vibrator lying beside me. The low hum as I turned it on excites me because I know it's getting ready to become hot and heavy. As I continue to lap up her pussy juices as if likened unto a cat with a bowl of milk, I purr as my body screams out to be touched, penetrated, and sucked. I want to fuck like this is my last day on earth. I rolled my head sideways and reached up to pinch her nipples that were standing at attention in anticipation of my touch. We decided to switch places because I'm already on fire. She spreads my legs wide and went down with her experienced tongue penetrating my pussy like a penis in frenzy. Oh, I can't contain myself, reaching out to find something to hold on to as I claw at her arms and hands. She squeezes my hands so firmly. I think this can't be as good as it seems. What the hell kind of lovemaking is this? So passionate, so hot, and so intense. I'm loving every minute of it. And then I realize it's lesbian love. Am I gay? Or should I keep this on the down low? Ooh, yes. Ooh, touch me right there. Oh, that feels so good. Ooh, I'm coming. I'm coming. Oh, that feels so good. Thank you. The Down Low by authors Terry E. Lowes. Voiceovers by Gail Delicious Johnson. Copyrighted.
Two thumbs up and snap.
You're a mess. Did you hear it, Jadino?
Yeah, I heard it.
Okay.
You must be kidding.
Yeah,
because you couldn't hear it the first time.
Oh, boy, damn.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad I ain't get over carried away. That sounds like another episode. Sounds like another episode of what's that show? Oz the Return.
Uh-huh.
I got watch out,
y'all. Okay.
I'm live.
Mm-hmm.
It was good, though.
Thank you. Rhea, did you enjoy it?
Well, you know, I told you you got one of the most sexiest voices I think I've ever heard.
All right.
I ain't never said no secret about that.
Thank you, darling. Well, thank you.
You know, this has been a wonderful evening, and in spite of our guests had to leave so abruptly, but we do understand, you know, him being over there in Asia. And, you know, we're going to all pray for him, and, you know, hopefully he'll get his wife over here, you know, and, you know, support him as best we can because, you know, it's no place like home. I don't care wherever you go in this world. There's no place like home. I've been all, not all over the world, but different states and, you know, staying at a lengthy time. And at one point or another, I always think I want to go home. I want to go home, you know. So there's no place like home. And he's been over there 12 years, you know, sticking to staying with his wife. And, you know, I know he obviously loves her to death, you know. So we're going to pray for him and hope that he gets her and them to the states and, you know, he can have his baby and, you know, live a happy life, you know, because he deserves it. Okay, right. Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience, as you all know, and our subject matter is sexual, but not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, and issues relevant to everyday life. We appreciate you, our listening audience, for your questions and comments. If you have a topic and you'd like to be a guest on the show, send an email to me, that's gjdelicious37@gmail.com, or to Rhea Alexis, that's R-H-E-A-A-L-E-X-I-S, @yahoo.com, or jdino, that's j.dino, D-I-N-O, Blasco, B-L-A-S-C-K-O, @gmail.com, and in the subject line, type topic or guest. We're here every Wednesday from 10:30 p.m. for an hour to an hour and a half of topics. And if it's juicy, we're generally here for 2 hours, sometimes over to 2 hours, you know, enjoying adult conversations. Tune in every first Friday at 11 p.m. for open topic and the last Friday at 10:30 p.m. for my musical show, which I do slow jams or house music or happy hour. And that's going to be this Friday because this is the last Friday of the month at 10:30 p.m., and I'll also be playing music from the 50s on up. On Sunday, you have got to stop by Gail's Blues Joint at 7 p.m. That's where I play the blues and sassy music. And remember, bringing sexy back does not mean you've lost your sexy. Bringing sexy back is a state of mind and how you perceive yourself. Thank you, Rhea. Thank you, Jadino. And thank you, Terry. I do appreciate you guys for being here tonight to help me do this show, you know, as you generally do. I do appreciate you guys and love you so much for that. And, you know, hopefully you guys will come back on Sunday or, you know, Friday. But I know you will be here with me on Wednesday. Jadino.
Yes.
You're getting ready to embark on a radio show, aren't you?
Not a radio show.
What is it?
It's going to be, it's wild. It's going to be like YouTube. So basically, it's me times seven family of Ty Dixon, and we doing right. Something live and called the Uncut World of Jadino, Seven and Ty Show. So it's not a radio show. It's like we're going to do like videos. We're going to do skits, like 20 minutes on YouTube, and we actually want people to send there. Like you might see a funny video or one of those brothers be like, and it'd be like one of those funny stupid pictures or whatever, and we're going to just give live comments on it when we film it, then shoot it back out. We're trying to do that 5 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, let everybody know about that. And let everybody else know what else you do, where you're at and all this and that.
I'm on Facebook. You can reach me on Gmail at jdinoblasco@gmail.com. That's a dot behind a J. We also doing a viewing of Diva City 3 tomorrow at Rose's Dream.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rose is Deja Vu. I'm sorry. I'm tripping off old. And it's down there on, I had an address. It's on 8th Street. So,
right. Right.
So, yeah, we're going to be there tomorrow starting at 8th, and they're going to show a viewing of it. And a lot of the cast members are going to be there. It's good for networking, come through and see what we do as far as film. And I got a lot of projects in the work, but that's the main one right now. I think Mitch Creedle, he always writing, and he said he got another event that he's going to be putting out soon. I think he's going to announce that tomorrow. So you'll be seeing us more and more every week.
Okay. All right, Rhea, you want to let everybody know what you do?
Well, I am an avid reader and a book reviewer, and I review independently as well as with several noted entities. can best reach me on Facebook. That's Rhea Alexis M. Banks on Facebook. But I'm also on Goodreads, Shafari, The Reading Room, Amazon. It's kind of easy to locate me.
All right. And authoress Terry E. Lyles.
Yes, darling. You can find me on Facebook as authoress Terry E. Lyles, as well as on LinkedIn and Sweetfire01 on Twitter, as well as I'm a radio host to two shows. The first one is Authors Corners at 7 p.m. each Thursday, Eastern Standard Time on WMEL 104.1. And on Fridays at 7:30, my personal baby, my show that I produce is called Unmasked on authoress Terry E. Lyles. And this Friday, my guest is Abducted by Aliens. So stay tuned and check me on my personal website, www.terrylyle.com. I got 9 books that you can read and have a good time.
Yes, you can.
Right.
I got a couple of them. All right, everybody. So thank you guys again. I love you, and everybody have the rest of the beautiful weekend. And remember, if nobody said they love y'all today, I do, and so does God. Have a good one, everybody. Good night.
All right, good night.
Good night.
My Nala got the best radio show on the Internet.